Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living but it's actually real and obtainable, that's why.
What you're gonna find is you're gonna find stories of redemption. You're gonna find stories of addiction. You're gonna find stories of suicide and mental health and people sharing what it's like to love someone who's addicted, what it's like to love someone who they've lost to suicide.
If I tap into Most High Media, I'm able to listen to people who are me and have found a way to get better.
Hey guys, welcome to Most High Show. Got a great conversation ahead today. Going to be talking to Bianca. She's relatively new to sobriety, but has a great story. Great stuff to tell us. So stick around. It's going to be a great conversation. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Hey, Bianca.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing really good. So we're going to jump right into it. So if you would be kind enough to just give us a little bit of background as far as let's go back to sort of your family dynamics, as it were. You've got how many siblings?
Got one younger brother. He's 3 years younger than me.
So you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest.
Okay, so there were just the two of you, and then it. You grew up in Texas?
Yes. So I was born in Oklahoma, and then I spent most of my growing up in New Braunfels, Texas, in between San Antonio and Austin. Very small town.
Okay. How would you describe your childhood? Was it relatively normal growing up?
So my parents divorced when I was in first grade. They remarried when I was in fourth grade, which moved us to New Braunfels. And then they split again my junior year of high school. So elementary school was a little weird, a little wonky, because I did move around and switch schools quite a bit.
Why is that? Why'd y'all move?
So we were in Carrollton. Dad was military, so he was in the Air Force. And so just the different Air Force bases, and I guess his job ended him in the San Antonio, Austin area and found New Braunfels. We went to school when I was in third grade. I went to school in Carrollton. Then I spent a couple months in New Braunfels at a private Christian school and then ended my third grade year in Carrollton. And then fourth grade, I ended up in New Braunfels and graduated from New Braunfels High School.
Was that a public school?
That was a public school. I did go to New Braunfels Christian Academy in middle school. That was rough.
How many years were you in a Christian school?
Half of sixth grade, all of seventh grade, and all of eighth grade.
So why did you say that was rough?
So I got pulled out the middle of sixth grade. And so I was only 2 years into being in school in New Braunfels. I had finally developed friends. I had been playing sports. And then after Christmas break, I basically got tossed into a private Christian school where there were already not very many people of color in New Braunfels. Then you stick me in a small Christian school and I'm about the only one. There was another girl in my class, the African-American. Other than that, it was just us. And then I got deemed the public school kid because I came from public school. So everybody had this conceived notion that, you know, I was a public school kid, so I was troubled.
But did you grow up in what you would consider a Christian household, though?
Very much so. Very much so.
So how?
I was christened Catholic when I was a baby. Grew up very, very much. I mean, it was every Sunday we were at church. We went to Oakwood Baptist Church. We got baptized as a family when my parents were married. You know, the town was very small. Everybody knew us. You know, my mom worked for a very prestigious insurance firm in the middle of, you know, in the middle of town. Everybody got to know my dad. He was very popular, great personality. Everybody loved my dad. They grew to love him. And we were the Harper family. We grew up in one of the nicer neighborhoods in New Braunfels. And again, you know, everybody saw us every Sunday, almost the same seats. You know, it was just one of those things. We were, I don't want to say the Brady Bunch because our family wasn't that large, but, you know,
purposes, you grew up in a relatively normal household, suburbs,
yep.
School. How did you perform in school?
I didn't get my first B until I was in college.
Okay, so you were relatively high achiever in school. Was the same true for your brother?
I think he high achiever, but being the oldest, I think I had different expectations, at least when I was growing up, that's how it felt. I know he, you know, got, you know, mixed grades, A's and B's, stuff like that. But I definitely felt like I had the expectation of, you know, it was get hundreds and A's and, you know, nothing else was acceptable. This is how I felt growing up.
Go back a little bit to where, when was the first time you sort of recognized that you were different than your classmates, you were different from your peer group?
I started having feelings probably second grade. And I didn't know what these feelings were. I had seen a couple different things around, but again, didn't know what it was. And then growing up in
but you were saying also that you were one of very few minorities that you had in the town that you were living in, correct?
Correct.
So that was sort of always at the socially at the forefront for you. Everybody else.
I stuck out like a sore thumb. I mean, there were times when we went to salons and they told us basically we don't do ethnic hair and shooed me away and they wouldn't work on my hair. We were refused service at a couple of restaurants back in like it was 98, 99. I mean, it's, you know, not that long ago, but it was, you know, that kind of town that my dad was one of the only African American guys in the town and we stood out.
Do you remember how that made you feel?
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I know prior to moving to New Braunfels, I was very heavy into researching, you know, African American culture and Black History Month. And, you know, I was reading books about, you know, Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King. And then I got here and it was, I've got to blend in, is how I felt. The best way to make it in this town was to try to blend in. So I tried to excel in grades.
Okay.
I tried to excel in sports, which I did. And I felt like that helped me blend in, not stick out, you know, straightening my hair, you know, trying to dress the way everybody else dressed.
And so you just tried to make adjustments where you could to
blend in,
not stand out from the crowd.
Right.
So let's go forward a little bit to your, I guess, what some people would consider formative years. So your high school years, went to public school through high school?
Yes. So I went back to high school. I was very serious about sports and did feel like I had a chance at that school, at that private Christian school. So my parents, you know, allowed me to go back to public school. And so I jumped right back in. I played summer.
Push to public school?
I pushed to go back to public school.
Okay. So you weren't exactly thriving in the private?
I was doing well academically.
Socially, though?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, I was friends with the boys, but there was only like four of them at that school. I got picked on a lot for hanging out with the boys. All the girls thought that I wanted to date the boys, which, as you can see from looking at me, that was, you know, far from the truth, but nobody knew that. I looked like any regular girl at the time, and so it was rough. It was a beating.
So when you transitioned to public school, was that a relief for you in a lot of ways?
Yes, I played summer league competitive softball and basketball. So I knew a lot of the public, you know, I basically was going back to school with the friends that I started with in fourth grade and I played summer ball with. So it was a pretty smooth transition for me. And I felt better. I felt better about myself. I felt like I didn't stick out nearly as much. And there was a little less pressure to try to fit in going back to public school.
So did you date any in high school?
Yeah, I had my first boyfriend my freshman year of high school. And it turned into, I guess we just became really good friends. We're still friends to this day. We both figured out that we like smoking pot pretty early. And that was pretty much all we did was smoke, hang out, and that was that. I had a few other boyfriends throughout high school, more for, again, the image, trying to fit in. I didn't necessarily want boyfriends, but I felt if I had boyfriends, it would take off a lot of pressure off of me to look and blend in to the society that was New Braunfels.
So, but during this time, alcohol didn't play a role.
Not even close.
On in your life.
Not even close.
So that didn't crop up at all, but you did smoke weed occasionally?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. No, alcohol was very at the back of my mind just because growing up, it was around my family a lot, and I didn't like what I had seen the effects of alcohol do. I could almost attribute it to my parents' divorce both times, and I swore up and down that I was never going to touch it, you know, drink it, anything, or be anything like anybody who drank alcohol.
So who around you did you see that was actively in alcoholism?
Primarily my dad at the time when I was growing up.
Okay, so did you go away to college?
I did. I went to Baylor. So Baylor is about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours from where I grew up at. It's in Waco, Texas.
Okay, so you got away from a lot of the things that you were familiar with.
Yeah, I ran. As soon as I graduated, I got away as fast as I could. Not too far, but.
So briefly explain your college experience for us.
So Baylor is a private Baptist university. I know I willingly went to Baylor, but again, I was put in that position where I'm now back in a religious institution, basically. Chapel is required. And it was more of, college wasn't even an option for me. I felt growing up, it was expected. If I didn't go to college, that just wasn't acceptable. Okay. I was the first one on my mom's side to go to college. My dad actually went to Baylor. And so part of my decision in going to Baylor was, and I guess deep down was trying to make him proud.
So you're still, still dating guys during college, correct?
Still dating guys. Still dating.
Actively dating, correct?
Yes.
So about what time did your drinking sort of take off and why? Because I know that's a question that you were asking yourself a little bit in recovery, exactly why you drank. So was it about this time that you were really introduced to alcohol, and did it really ramp up then?
So not even, I guess, socially, my sophomore year is when it kind of came in. And even then it wasn't very much. I still didn't care for the smell. I didn't like it. Wasn't a fan of it. And where it really kicked in was, I'm sorry?
But you still drank just to fit in.
Yep.
Okay. So about, so, So at about what point then did the drinking really take off for you? And if you can sort of briefly describe the circumstances surrounding that.
I had a common law marriage and we had a divorce and custody battle. And that's what really kicked off my drinking.
So this is all post college.
This is still in college.
Okay.
This is about my junior year of college.
So you had a common law marriage when you were in college.
Yes.
And then how long did that last?
6 months, if that.
Not very long. And then you went through a divorce proceeding?
Yes.
And you had a child at this point, correct?
Yes. She was very young.
And so how did that divorce, those divorce proceedings work out for you or not work out for you in this case?
Not well.
Okay.
It was a 3-year proceeding. At the very end of it, my attorney decided to not show up to court because she found out I was engaged to a woman.
While you're going through the divorce procedures with your common law husband, mm-hmm. you were engaged to a woman.
Yes.
We can back it up just a little bit, then we'll move forward again. So how did that relationship with the woman come about? When did you get to the point where you're like, well, I'm going to start seeing women now after coming out of this straight relationship?
I had finally finished my degree. I knew coming out of Baylor just was not going to be an option. I couldn't risk losing my scholarship or my education. So I think it was when I started my radio career in Dallas, a little more liberal, a little more open, and I finally felt like, all right, well, maybe this divorce proceeding is a blessing in disguise, and I can finally be who I really am, which was shocking to a lot of people. Because I still had the long hair, I still wore the dresses, the heels.
So your attorney did not show up to the proceedings. And so then what happened with the custody of the child?
So the judge basically told us, we've been doing this for 3 years. We either move forward, you with no attorney with full hearing, or you guys come up with an agreement and we don't have a full hearing. I, of course, was terrified. I was the only one in the courtroom besides my mother on my side. I had no idea what to do. So the best solution or agreement we could come up to at the time was that I now had supervised visitations that I had paid.
So let's tie this into alcoholism then. I assume it was about this point that it really sort of skyrocketed for you, correct?
That's an understatement, that's for sure. Okay.
Well, without getting in too much into the nitty-gritty, tell me about that. You would go periods of time without having custody of your daughter, correct?
Right. You're right. So we did a week on, week off. And in the weeks that I didn't have her, I wasn't used to being alone or not having her. And my coworkers and friends were trying to do what they thought was helpful for me. And it was took me out to a bar and what turned into a drink here, a drink there, trying to help me cope and deal and vent. Turned into every time she was gone, I was drinking heavily.
Okay. And tell me about the drug use that sort of jumped into the mix during this time.
The alcohol no longer, I guess, sufficed. And, you know, the all-nighters talking and venting turned into cocaine, which in my head helped the conversation carry on and for longer and was like my therapy. Cocaine then escalated into meth. To the point where, everybody knows that's done meth. And if you haven't done meth, you smoke it. I was snorting it at one point.
And so everything's sort of falling apart around you. You've lost custody of your, at least primary custody of your daughter, correct?
Correct.
You're drinking, you're using drugs heavily.
Mm-hmm.
What's your work life consist of?
And that was the tricky part, was I couldn't let anybody know that I went from being, you know, the athlete, the stellar student. I couldn't let anybody know what was actually happening behind closed doors. So I guess you could say it was high functioning. I still had great grades. I still worked 30 hours, still a top sales rep at my company that I worked for. I still maintained my life, if you will, publicly. Behind closed doors was a different story.
So when did this whole situation bottom out for you?
So I got my first DWI. And then a couple years later, I got a second and third DWI within a month of each other. So I'm now sitting in jail for a week, 2 days after I got married. And my spouse at the time had no idea I was even in litigation for DWI 2 and 3.
So your spouse not only didn't even know about the DUIs, but clearly wasn't aware of
She knew of the first one, just didn't know of number 2 and number 3.
So what about the level of your drinking and your drug use? Was anybody in on that besides you?
Drinking, my mom always was worried, concerned, I guess you could say. Drug use was mainly the people that I would use with, and sometimes they were friends, sometimes they weren't. It just varied on how badly I was feeling, how badly I wanted it. That depended on who I hung out with.
So after your third DUI, you went to jail?
Right. So I went to jail for all of them, but on the third one, I sat in there for a week.
And so this was your first week being sober, and how long?
Jeez, 2011, so probably 6 years, six or seven years.
So you came out of jail, and then what happened from there? You got some help at that point.
I got some help. I went to an intensive outpatient program at Recovery Healthcare here in Dallas. And that's when they asked the question, why do you even drink? Why do you use? Like, what's the real story behind it?
So what sort of answers have you come up for yourself with that, in regards to that question?
The sadness, the loneliness, the depression, it all came down to, I was trying to fill a void and was trying to give myself therapy without publicly telling somebody I need help. I was afraid of asking for help. And when you're at the bar, it's almost like the bartender's your therapist, your buddies, or the other, you know, barflies are your buddies. You're kind of venting, you feel better about yourself. You get to be this other person that nobody really knows what's happening in here. And it's like, it goes away for a second. So you just keep filling it and filling it and filling it. And then the next day you wake up and it's still there.
So you met some people along the way that clearly were helping you not just figure out why you drink, but figure out how to live a life without drugs and alcohol. So give me an idea of what it's like for your life now, since you've been sober now for about a year and a half, correct?
A year and a half as of this past Tuesday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My spouse and God. I had a lot of time while I was sitting in my cell to really think. And religion, like, I guess, you know, as we've talked, has been in my life for a long time. And I fought it. I didn't believe in it. And I questioned it. I wondered, my mom talked about being able to hear this voice, and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't hear it. And I heard it. And
why are you in jail?
Right. While I was in jail, and it was a kind of an aha moment that this was my rock bottom. If I don't get it together, I'm going to be sitting in this for the rest of my life, or I'm going to end up drinking and driving again, possibly, or using, or I'm going to end up dead. And suicide crossed my mind, you know, prior to that. But it was like, I knew I had to get out and I knew I had to fight. My now nine-year-old, she was counting on me. And I couldn't give up. There was no giving up. So between my wife and God, church, I actually don't even do AA meetings. I've tried them. They weren't particularly for me. I had a lot with that intensive outpatient program that made me realize a lot about me. I got involved in my church heavily, to the point where I started coming across people who have been 15 years sober, 20 years sober. And those kind of became my mini AA or NAs by, I don't want to say socializing, but being around those kind of people at church, being able to depend on them, and then being able to talk to somebody and feel that love in my life that I got from my spouse, that when I got out of jail, she didn't lecture me. She didn't leave me. She took me to go eat. She took me to go get a shower, and just showed me a kind of loving compassion that you only hear about in the Bible. You dream about it. And that in conjunction with my faith, and just really coming to terms with addiction and abuse, it's not prejudice. It will come for it. It can and will come for anybody. You can have the dream life. You can go to the best university. You can grow up in a perfect home, be surrounded by religion. But if you let that darkness inside, that pain, that hurt, if you let it consume you, it can get a hold of you, and it can get a hold of you fast.
So the turning point for you, well, clearly one of the turning points was sitting in jail for a week, but coming out of jail, the turning point for you was just asking for help, correct?
Correct.
And so as a result, you've got this life now. You've got a loving spouse. You've got an anchor church. You've got...
Got the job of my dreams. Mm-hmm. I'm finally using my degree again. I had a falling out with my dad in the middle of college, and I'm proud to say that he and I are like best buds again. And it's something that makes me emotional a little bit. I always wanted a relationship with my dad growing up. And so that level of perfection that I always strived for and never felt like it was enough, just getting sober, our relationship has gone in such a positive direction. My kids now have their grandfather. My stepmother and I are very close. We text daily. Just things I never dreamt possible. I have a beautiful 9-month-old. I am seeing my oldest unsupervised. Just things that you cannot... that wouldn't have been possible had I not gotten sober. And there is this type of high and euphoria is uncomparable compared to anything that I could have put in my body.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Listen, Bianca, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you.
To share your story. I know that there's a lot of people that are listening. I can tell you right now, I can certainly relate to a lot of aspects of your story, from the growing up in a religious household to the insecurity, the social insecurity, coupled with a lot of anxiety, damaged relationships along the way, a lot of loneliness, and then, you know, finding the gift of sobriety and then having a lot of those relationships that are important to me restored and transformed to better than they ever were. You know, and going forward with just a lot of confidence and a lot of hope for the future. And I get really excited when I hear people that have not only sort of gone in a lot of ways along the same path as I have, but also have the same outlook to what sobriety and a spiritual awakening holds. So thank you again.
Thing.
For sharing your story. And listen, how did you hear about us? How did we come across your path there?
Instagram. I started following some sober stuff just for motivational, and I saw that you guys had an app. I downloaded it and I started listening to the podcast. I started hearing other people's stories and I realized I'm not alone in this journey. While our stories may be a little different, you guys have a wealth of knowledge that I was encouraged by. It encouraged me to share my story. I feel like sharing this truth today is just the beginning of my transformation. You guys have transformed a lot of lives and touched a lot of lives with what you've shared, the stories that you shared. And I'm honored and blessed to be a part of this today.
Well, thanks for putting the word out there for us. And listen, if you happen to, if you're a listener or a viewer and you just came across us per chance, we have an awesome app, Most High app. Download that. There's a lot of great content on there, not just 12-step information, but a lot of stories like Bianca's here. And I'm sure that if you dig into it, you're going to find a lot of stuff that you can relate to in your own journey. Also, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, at The Most High Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bianca, thank you again. That's an awesome story. Y'all stay tuned for some more great stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, James.